Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and this week's guest, Tom Coyne, joins the program again. Tom is traveling America, writing another book about travel, this time stateside. He did one in Ireland, he did one in Scotland, now he's doing one in the United States. And we actually played 100 holes of golf about a week and a half ago for a charity, Youth on Course. So we talked a little bit about that, but then of course we dove into what's happening with the book and the travels and the golf courses and if he wants to throw his golf clubs in a lake or an ocean yet, how tough that can be. As golfers, we all know that there's times where you love it and you can't wait to get back out there, and there's times when you don't even want to look at your golf clubs. So it was a great conversation. I love the guy. He is one of the more interesting people you will ever find in and around this game, so you'll enjoy the conversation for sure. This week's Clubhouse podcast, as all of them are brought to you by my good friends at Titleist. This week, I'm going to talk to you about the TS drivers. They're awesome. I mean, they've got TS2 and TS3 came out. People loved them. Then TS4 came out. Our good buddy Max Homa, friend of the program, used it. He won for the first time at the Wells Fargo Championship earlier this year using the TS4. I played with Max about a week and a half ago. I'm not sure he missed the middle of a fairway. I'm not talking about missed a fairway. I'm saying missed the center line of a fairway. If we were playing cart paths, if you had to hit your driver on a cart path, he would have hit the TS4 on a cart path. It was unbelievable the way he was driving the golf ball. Competitive golfers at every level know that playing your best means pressing every advantage possible, and the new TS medals let you raise your game with greater speed designed into every detail. And you can see what the Titleist Speed Project can add to your golf swing. It added some to mine. It can add it to yours. Hit the TS lineup against any other option and see how much faster fast can be. Find the nearest Titleist fitting at Titleist.com. Check it out. Go hit them. You'll love them. If it's winter time, go hit them in a bay. Check out your numbers. Right now in Phoenix, there's no golf because every golf course is under the knife and being overseeded, which is a huge bummer. But I am actually headed to Oregon this weekend to go to Bandon Dunes. I'm going to play a whole bunch of golf with a couple of buddies of mine. Very excited about that. I'm also excited about this. I mentioned Tom Coyne is on the program. Tom is a senior writer for the Golfers Journal. I've loved the Golfers Journal since it first came out. I have a new story coming out in the next issue that hits in November. And something cool that they're doing for us is, if you haven't heard, I have this hole-in-one fund. Basically, and I'm sure you've seen this if you follow me on social media at all, I've never made an ace in my life. I'm 35 years old. I'm going to be 36 in November. And I started this a couple of years ago, just a jar, and I throw a dollar in the jar every time I play a round of golf without an ace. The jar now is over $500. Now, I haven't played 500 rounds of golf in a couple of years. I have had people donate. I've had friends send money in. I actually just mentioned this on Twitter last week, and followers Mike Rice and Nicole Montanez both donated on Venmo some money to throw in there. Once I make an ace, I'm going to just take the jar to the Phoenix Children's Hospital and give it to them. And I've also had some friends of mine, I've got professional golfer buddies that have promised to pledge some money once it happens, if it ever happens. They said they'll pledge more money if they're actually playing with me in the round that it happens, so a little extra pressure. But what the Golfers Journal is going to do, and why this matters, is I'm going to have a specific subscription link. I'm going to send out on social media. I will have it on my Twitter feed and on my Instagram profile. And if you click through that link and you sign up and subscribe to the Golfers Journal, they're going to donate a portion of the money you send them to my hole-in-one jar for charity. So it's really kind of a win-win. You get the Golfers Journal, which is awesome. Any golf fan that just likes to read interesting stories that are evergreen and never go old will love it. Trust me, I have them all. I read them every time I get them within the first couple of days. Every story is interesting and different, and that's really what they've been doing and changing really golf journalism in that regard. And you'll donate some money to charity. So it's a win-win. It helps us out. Our idea is to make the jar so overflowed that we have to get another jar, which is kind of depressing because that means I haven't made an ace. But hey, you know what? If nothing else, I can be 70 years old and sit here with a few thousand dollars and know that I can donate it somewhere once I croak because my iron play is that bad. I'm going to make one. Trust me, I'm going to make one. Hope you guys are having a great week. As I said, I know winter is approaching for people in the Northeast and in parts of the country, and golf is basically dwindling down. But there's golf on TV, and we're going to roll out some more podcasts throughout the next few weeks. I'll have a little bit of a recap about Bandon Dunes and my opportunity to get to play nine holes on the Sheep Ranch, which I'm very excited about. But for now, let's get to our guest. And we welcome back into the clubhouse one of my favorite people in all of golf, Tom Coyne. You can follow him on Instagram and Twitter at Coyne Ryder, C-O-Y-N-E Ryder. He's a senior writer at the Golfers Journal. He also hosts the Golfers Journal podcast, which I highly recommend. And he is working on his fifth book. And I would say, Tom Coyne, this might be the biggest, I would say, planned event you've done thus far. A Course Called America. Last I checked, America, a slightly larger place than both Ireland and Scotland.
It's the biggest undertaking of my life, Shane. It is. I knew it was bigger, obviously, than Ireland and Scotland, but it's proven to be a beast. I'm here in Massachusetts talking to you right now. You're not. I'm talking to you from Massachusetts, and it's been wild, man. So I'm doing all 50 states. I'm doing every U.S. Open venue. I've been on the road since April. You'll notice it's October. And I'll be on the road through December. So by that point, I will have done, you know, I will have golfed in every state, and it'll probably be about 250 courses. So yeah, there's just been a lot to see, a lot to take in, but it's been awesome, man. I mean, it's been really cool to get to know my own country, which was the whole point of doing this project, is that I knew sort of Ireland and Scotland. I'd traveled and researched there more than I had America, you know. I certainly knew Philadelphia, but, you know, it's been awesome to get out and be a tourist in my own country.
Yeah, I mean, when you first did the travel version of your books and you started in Ireland, I mean, I can only imagine you never envisioned that it would become this. I mean, this is really, it's kind of your shtick. I mean, you traveled Ireland, you walked a lot of the country, you played all these golf courses nobody had ever heard of. And what I love about your journey is I feel like you kind of jumped into this basically focus on travel and focus on finding hidden gems right about the time that became popular. I mean, you know, we used to have a top 100 board on our wall, and we'd look at the top 100s by every golf publication out there, and those were the courses we wanted to play. And what I find so fascinating about what you've been able to do and uncover with your words and your novels is you're showcasing a lot of places that once you read about it, you want to go play there, and it has to be cool to finally get to do that exact thing in America, because as you said, it's your backyard, and you know, in reality.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely the goal, and it's been the best part of all the books, is to sort of bring some light to lesser known places that are deserving of visitors, you know. Yeah, I had no idea when I pitched the Ireland book, it was like, I think I want to write a book about golf in Ireland, and this is like, and I'll walk it, that'll be crazy, right? And then a publisher says yes, and you're like, oh my God, I have to do it. And so, you know, that becomes the Scotland book, and yeah, and that sort of takes me to here where I am. But, you know, I don't want to, I am visiting very well-known places, and I'm telling some of their unknown history, which is cool. But I definitely, it's always about like the finds, the you know, the hidden gems, the places that people don't go. You know, that was something that, you know, the Ireland book comes out, and more people started going to Carn or to Crutch Island. With the Scotland book, some people are going to Machronish that might not have known about it, or to Shiskin or to Merker. I'm not saying the only reason that the people go there is because of the books, but if it gets even a few dozen people to go there in some of these little places, that has a real impact. And that's been definitely the most gratifying experience of those two books. So if I can send some more folks to some of these places that I've found, and I'm not just finding cool places, I'm finding like cool golf trips,
right,
in America, you know, like that, where you could say, hey, like, who would ever think of going to Mississippi for a buddy trip? But here's an idea for like a really cool, you know, 4-day awesome golf trip in Colorado or Mississippi or in Alabama or something like that. So that's been, you know, yeah. So I'm always on the lookout for finds, stuff that's off the radar.
And how has it been juggling the social media aspect of this? Because really, Scotland, you know, it kind of bled into Instagram and Twitter, and now it's really something I feel like you walk alongside. I mean, you showcase where you're at and where you're playing, who you're playing with. I know you have giveaways with some of your sponsors like Titleist, where you can, you know, you can invite people to come out and play with you and they get a chance to kind of be involved in the book. How has social media helped and in a way maybe even hurt a little bit giving away some of the stuff that you know is going to be in the book?
Yeah, it's true. So, I mean, social media, right, with the other books is just like every couple of days, hey, look at this cool picture. it's a huge part of this adventure, though. Right from the start, you know, when I announced the project, it was via Instagram and Facebook and Twitter that I got most of the course recommendations and also got most of the invitations from folks to come play at them, you know. So it's been hugely helpful in finding spots and in getting on them as well. I mean, obviously the challenge in America versus Ireland and Scotland is that most of our golf courses are private. So it's been very helpful that way. What's been cool about it is that this sort of community is growing up around the trip. And that's something that, you know, I didn't have with the Scotland book. And so, right, like you said, when I have an open tee time or have a spot somewhere, I throw it out on Instagram or Twitter and three dudes show up, or sometimes more. And that's been pretty amazing. And that's been great for the story. And then I'm getting to meet a lot of different people and get their stories. And it's just added a lot to, you know, what will be the larger narrative. You know, in the Scotland and Ireland books, like I invited a lot of friends. And I still have friends coming on this trip, but now it's like I'm inviting strangers. So like every day I'm playing with three or six, usually, you know, people I've never met before.
Yeah, the Instagram world and this, listen, you and I are kind of in this. I mean, there are people that I can only imagine that are way bigger than us that get these invites all the time. But a part, and I mean, I'm sure people know this, but a part of quote unquote golf media is you do get invitations a lot from people that are members of these really nice golf courses. And it is in a way it's an interesting dynamic because I want to go play here with these people I don't know, and then you go and you have an unbelievable experience. Or maybe the person's a little weird, or they might ask a whole bunch of questions that you get asked all the time. So it is, I can only imagine, it's a balance you have, but it's also something that's helping you with the book. I mean, you literally can reach out and go, I'm going to be in, let's just say Birmingham. I'm going to be in the Birmingham area this date, and you get four invites to certain golf clubs that you're looking to play. So it's, it is funny how it's kind of mirrored now compared to maybe some of the other books, is you have to go, okay, today I'm going to play with these random people that have been following me on Instagram for 2 years.
Totally. Yeah. It's really good. The folks who have been kind enough and generous enough to invite me places. But you, like you said, I mean, more than not, it's a matter of having to say no, because there's only so many days and so many courses. It's a very good problem to have more invitations than you can actually fit into your calendar. And, you know, my attitude, you know, it's with the Scotland book, and where I did play with just a handful of strangers who came over to play with, to join me, and had really good results with that. In terms of friendships and stories, I thought, you know, with this book, what the hell, I'm just going to be totally open to it and be happy to play with random people. And from a storytelling point of view, that if I get weirdos, you know, that's actually really useful. I haven't had enough weirdos, to be honest. I'm still looking for some, this story needs some more villains. So if you're a real jerk,
reach out at CoinWriter on Instagram. Send him all of the messages.
Yeah,
bring all your weird things, your iron head covers, your trinkets.
Yeah.
Bring all of it, and he'll definitely make the book. Well, you did get a chance to play with a weirdo in San Francisco. You played with me, and you played with me.
I did.
At Olympic Club. You invited me to be a part of this thing with Youth on Course, which they do an unbelievable job, and I'll let you kind of dive a little deeper into that. But about a week and a half ago, we played 100 holes of golf in one day, something I've never done, something you've never done. Considering how much golf you play, to be a part of the most golf you've played in one day, I really felt like a big honor.
It was, yeah, by far the most golf I've ever played. And I was so, you were like, I can't believe you said yes. And you were very quickly said yes. Once you got the green light from your better half, you were in, and which I really appreciated, because I needed a friend to do this with me. And And you brought some great attention to the cause as well. I mean, Youth on Course, I met them at the PGA show last year, and they basically they're based out of Monterey, and they make it possible for junior golfers to play proper golf courses for $5, and they underwrite their tee times. So it sort of picks up, the first tee, that introduction to golf, and then you get to this point that, they saw this sort of void there of like, okay, well, where can they play? Now they want to golf, and now what? And that's a big barrier for so many junior golfers. So I think what they're doing is really great. It's really smart. They have mentoring even, beyond the golf for kids that are involved with Youth on Course. And so their big fundraiser is the 100-hole hike. So even back then, I was like, yeah, I'd be into that.
This
and
was, by the
then.
way, the PGA show, if people don't know, is the very first month of the year. So Tom was, he's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for the year and for the
Yeah, right.
season, going, oh, that'll be great. Not knowing that, five, six, 7 months later, he's going to have to go play 100 holes after he's played 36 a day for goodness, 4 or 5 months straight.
Yeah, I mean, it's January. I haven't played golf, and they're like, you can play 100 holes of golf. I'm like, yeah, let's go do it right now. And
I'm in.
but yeah, and then after the trip comes around, and I've been on the road, for months. I was in Bend, Oregon the day before, and Philadelphia the day before that. Land in San Francisco. We get to the golf course at, 6:15, 6:30 in the morning, and leaving in the dark, teeing off at 7 o'clock. It was just another one of those great moments that golf has given me, a lot of them that, I look around and I go, how the hell did I get here doing this? And there we were playing the Olympic Club, a lot around and around and around.
Kept playing. You can check out everything they do. It's youthoncourse.org. They do an unbelievable job. We're big fans of them. And if you want to go donate or do whatever you can to help them out or be a part of the 100-hole hike going forward, you can do it. What were you feeling like? What was your hole number where you were thinking, my goodness, how many more do we have left?
Like four, I think. Like, because I saw they had snacks and
96
everything,
left? This is
and I
so
was
many
like,
more.
I can go chill over there and have snacks and water. No, I think there's that initial excitement. We go around the first nine. You're feeling good, obviously. You're not tired yet. You know what? It was probably after we stopped for lunch, which you insisted on chowing down. And I'm glad you did, because the hoagies, well, subs, whatever, they were delicious. But after that, it was like I don't want to golf anymore.
Yeah, 50. We stopped for lunch at
You
52
stopped at
holes.
50,
We got
right?
to 50, and for some reason I said let's play two more. So just because, listen,
Yeah, because you passed halfway.
we're against the establishment. We were playing 52, not
Yeah.
50, and
Right.
I brought golf shoes that are really comfortable golf shoes, but I didn't realize that they weren't waterproof. They're more like the casual non-spike golf shoes. And I brought them. Well, it was really dewy in the morning, so part of my lunch break was to take my shoes and socks off and let them dry out, which was the best thing I did the entire day. But yeah, the going back after lunch, knowing you had basically the entire what you'd just done already to do it again, I felt like that was a wall we both hit.
That was a wall, and seeing the other golfers finish like way ahead of us. So for the folks who are listening, there were like, I don't know, maybe 12 people at this site doing the 100-hole hike, and we were just spread around the property, trying not to like get in each other's way. But it's like during a marathon when there's also a half marathon going on. And like the half marathoners like split off to the finish line, and like the marathon people have to keep going. Like that's what it felt like, watching
I
these guys
agree
like kind
with
of wrap it up.
you.
And I'm like, oh, jeez. And 'cause, and they were like, and they these were veterans as well. I mean, they were playing with one club. The most impressive thing was, I mean, they were so savvy. They had those ball suction cup things like on their 7 iron, so they didn't have to bend over to pick up the ball. I mean, talk about 100-hole pros. That was a classy move. So they were flying, and they finish it, whatever. Like we're having lunch, they're wrapping it up, and we've got 50 holes to go. It kind of breaks your heart a little bit.
I just want to take a quick break to remind you, do me a favor, go get fit for the Titleist TS driver. They have a TS2, a TS3, a TS4, TS1. They've got all sorts of TS drivers. They're all awesome. I would venture to say it's the best driver the Titleist has made in a few years. And I think you're seeing that professionally. You're seeing it out on the driving ranges. You're seeing it with your friends, the guys that always love to get the newest, latest, greatest drivers. That is in the bag. I'm seeing it all over the place. And the reason is, it's awesome. The TS medals let you raise your game with greater speed designed into every detail. And you can see what the Titleist Speed Project can add to your golf swing. Hit the TS lineup against any other option out there and see how much faster fast can be. Find your nearest Titleist fitting opportunity by visiting Titleist.com back to top. Yeah, we were like at 68, and I was like doing the math in my head because I'm not very smart, so I always had to do the math to figure out how many more we had left. And
yeah, I saw you typing away on your
always.
On your calculator.
I just 63's next, and then 64. But you know, we were shooting some stuff for you, and so we had some other people around us, and we were all trying to keep up with the numbers. By the way, I am so bad at counting when I need to count. So like if I'm jump roping, I never know what number I'm on. If I'm trying to get to 100, I'll forget what number I'm on at about 20. So playing 100 holes, I knew I was going to struggle with that. And we might have played 105 holes. We might have played 95 holes. There's a chance that we could be at least 5 holes off. But I remember we had 30, 32 holes left, and I was thinking to myself, this is basically 2 rounds of golf we have left, and we've already played so much already. And that was about the wall I hit. But I made you start yelling out how many holes we had left when we got to, what, about 15? And I think you were as excited to yell it out as knowing that was one less we had to play. And we did it.
It was the final 20, and I was just screaming them out, 20, 19, you know, and you could hear it all over the golf course. I think I put a little pep in my step, for sure. It made it feel like we were approaching the finish line, even though it was still, you know, 20 holes away.
Yeah, will you do 100 holes again in your lifetime, you think?
I don't know. I don't know, Shane. It's going to have to sit for a while. It's not going to happen this year. You know, it's one of those things, like the recall of the experience, it's too immediate. But, and like with the marathon, you know, you do a marathon and you're like, I'll never do that again. And then like 6 months later, you're sitting around and you sign up for another one. I feel like that could happen. I've learned, and having learned things from the experience as well. I mean, the people, the one club thing, which we did for a while. I think we did that for like 15 holes or something.
We were gonna do it for 9 holes, and we were really big fans of it. It was our favorite part of the day.
That was smart, and we also made up holes too. I think that was smart to keep it interesting, like going from tees to different greens and stuff. Because, you know, just going around in loop after loop, it gets really monotonous. So I have learned some things from doing it the first time. I'd be more efficient the second time around. So I'm not going to close the door on it forever. So would you do it?
I'm with you. I said no. I was like, you know, that was great. I'm glad we did it. It's a great cause. We love Youth on Course. You know, we hope we raised them some good money. And then I was flying home the next morning. I was like, oh, I'll never do that again ever the rest of my life. And then, now we're talking not even 2 weeks ago, and you're like, I could probably do it again. I could be convinced. Yeah. How many of you done doing these books? I mean, this is your third one. What's the most you've played in one day?
54.
Okay.
So I've never even done the 72, which some people do, like, at the summer solstice stuff. So 54 holes. But that's at 3 different courses. In like Scottish wind. And I did 54 holes in the Scotland book. I did it like 5 days in a row.
I remember that.
That was borderline.
That was the most depressing part of the book when you were literally
spilling
yourself out. Like, what am I
doing? I was depressed doing it. I was depressed. I got depressed again writing it. It was horrible. But I got to play all those courses and cross them off my list. And it's just, you know, the thing is with these stories, like if you're not doing something unreasonable or pushing yourself or like, and pushing yourself into weird, dark, uncomfortable, wild places or corners, then, you know, that's where the stories are. You know, nobody wants to hear about oh, I played another great golf course today, and then, you know, I hung out on the patio and lunch was delicious. You know, that's, no one wants to hear about your wonderful vacation. There's got to be struggle. And I've definitely built myself some struggle on the America trip. And playing 100 holes was a good addition to that.
So describe to me your relationship with golf. Like right now, as you're in the midst of this, and it's your job. I mean, you're writing a book for your family and for your living and for your livelihood, and you're doing a podcast based around golf, and you've got some video series that you're using and putting out on social media. Golf is a big part of what you are currently doing in your life, and it has been for a few years. So what's your relationship with golf? Do you love it still? Is it still a huge passion of yours?
It's probably unhealthy in that it is such a huge part of my life and that I am still obsessed with it. Like that there is still like, cause I don't know if that's like a healthy balance, it's sort of probably dysfunctional. Yeah. Like golf is with, and when I say that, I mean like if you took golf away, like, I don't know exactly who I would be. Wow, that was heavy, man. but it is such a big part of, it's a part of my work, and it's really the only thing that I do for fun as well. And
right.
And sometimes they cross over in great ways, sometimes in unpleasant ways, and in the sense that like it's not always fun. You know, if I'm not hitting it, like that's the frustrating thing on this trip. Like 3 days ago, I couldn't miss. And was just hitting it great. I had the answer to golf, and I was just gonna, you know, drop birdies for the next 3 months. And today I like couldn't find it. And so like when golf kind of abandons you like that, and it's so, it's not like I can turn it off and say, oh, tomorrow I'll go fishing. You know, I'm going golfing tomorrow, and I'm a little nervous about it because I was hitting everything off the planet today. So, the relationship is a deep one. It's a very deep one. I was thinking about that the other night. You know, this is just some game I started playing when I was a kid because my dad played, you know, and how it's basically become my life. You know, aside from my kids and my wife, it's my life.
Yeah,
so,
it's funny. Wow. I mean, I feel like I battle, and I think battle is the right word, because at times I do wonder why I still love playing so much, because it is what I do for a living, and I do feel very surrounded and sometimes a little suffocated by golf, because, you know, it's posting pictures on social media and it's talking about it and it's watching it on TV and then it's broadcasting it and podcasting about it. And yet, you know, on Saturday I'm going to Bandon Dunes to play 36 a day with my buddies. And why I want to do that is interesting, and I went through something. I don't know if you've gone through this. I'm sure you have, but a few months ago, I just said, I've gotta find another hobby. I mean, I can always play golf, and I love the sport, but I've gotta find something else. Is it gonna be guitar? Am I gonna become a person that works closely with his garden? Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I felt like I needed to do something else. Yet I come back to this, and again, I've been playing golf, you know, once a week since our 100-hole hike, and I still go out there and grind and want to play my best I've ever played, you know. So it's an interesting relationship.
It's like every day I wake up and think, like, this is going to be the day I'm going to play my best game, you know, the one I've been waiting for 44 freaking years, you know, that today is going to be the day that it's going to happen. And that is, you know, that's not healthy thinking. It's not sane thinking, but maybe it will be, you know? So there is that pursuit of par or pursuit of birdies or pursuit of hole in ones or your best round. Or really for me, it's just like things I'm trying to do in my swing. I just want to hit real solid shots now. That is still so alluring, and it pulls you right out of the house or to Bandon Dunes or wherever. It's wild. Did you find another hobby?
No,
that could use something too.
I started juggling, which my wife thinks is massively dorky. But Brad Faxon told me that it's really good for the gray matter in your brain. juggling is. And he's one of those guys that he's got a new theory about life and physicality and how you can get in better shape and improve everything basically weekly, if not daily. So he was giving me this whole thing about juggling the last summer, and Jew Linkster can juggle. And so I was like, I got to learn how to juggle. So I was actually YouTubing juggling the other day, and I had these juggling balls, and my puppy was looking at me like, those are mine, right? Those are mine. I'm like, no, these are actually for me. This is a part of my life now. But that's it. That's all I do. This is terrible to say. It's embarrassing to say. I'm embarrassed to admit that I don't have other hobbies. I got to figure something out, but I still love this damn game. It's so annoying. You were talking about, and I asked you this on the golf course, and I think you touched a little on it, you know, in kind of your last point about the love of golf, but you're a competitive guy. I knew you were going to be a competitive guy before I played with you. I mean, if you've read Paper Tiger, for goodness sakes, you know Tom wants to play well, wants to get better, wants to go out there, and if you're playing a $20 game, he wants to win. And I asked you, what happens when you go through those stretches when you're doing these books where you're playing terrible? Because I, for one, when I'm playing terrible, don't want to play golf. I mean, I want to put the clubs away for a week or two. You can't do that. I mean, that's not something you're able to do as you're writing these journey books. How do you get through that?
Yeah, that's the hard part when your golf has sort of abandoned you, because it probably wasn't that long ago that you had your finger right on it, you know? So what's been kind of cool on this trip, in that the going back to the social media and the posting of stuff, is I have my swing on video like 4 million times on my phone. So what I'll do at night, this is how screwed up I am, you know, I should be doing anything else, but I'll be going through the videos.
I know where you're going with this, and it's awesome.
And I'll be looking frame by frame what's going on, and I'll compare it to like a day when I was striping it to like, oh, this video from today where I couldn't, you know, find the club face, and I'll come up with just, okay, this is my swing thought for tomorrow. And I swear to God, I'll get excited again. Like if I can just like today was like, all right, I'm going to post on my left hip and really fire my right side, or, you know, that was like 2 days ago, and it just totally worked. And I was so excited to go out and just have that one swing thought and use it. So I look at stuff, and then I try to get one thing that I'm going to try to accomplish in my swing, and then go out and do it. And that kind of gets me fired up.
Well, and I'm sure seeing and playing in different places gets you fired up as well. Because if you don't gloss over the sign you're pulling into, every golf course and membership is really, it's the most fun part, I can only imagine, of doing these books. I asked you this when we were playing together, but has there been a golf course, and I know you've got, you know, months left, but has there been a golf course throughout the journey that has shocked you, surprised you, one you maybe didn't hear about or knew about before you got there?
Gosh, there's been like so many. And that's of course definitely the part that pulls me out of bed and gets me down the road is that I get to play these new and wonderful plays. They're all new to me, you know. So playing Yeamans Hall was totally like a trip back in time, and I knew nothing about that place. That was just a super interesting, the history there of it sort of being this stop for the Rockefellers and the Kelloggs, et cetera, on their way to Florida, and they'd hang out there for a bit and have this beautiful, amazing, untouched, you know, rarely played golf course. That was super cool. Lasonia in Wisconsin was like an eye opener for like a municipal course. I'm like, this is just as good as it gets. Gosh, there's so many. I played one yesterday, Northeast Harbor in up here in Maine. It's 5,000 yards, and the course record is -4. It was so damn hard and so cool up in the granite of Maine, just stunningly beautiful with incredible history too. Like C.B. McDonald used to hang out there and stuff. Man, I could bore your listeners for hours with all my finds. Oregon, Silva Sally Ranch, where they had the goats. I mean, people know it for the goats, but the goat caddies, but getting there was just such a challenge, and then being rewarded for being there with this incredible reversible golf course, that just blew me away. My gosh, the surprises are endless.
Yeah, I mean, it is, I can only, so are you adding courses when you get to a place and somebody says to you, oh my goodness, you've got to go play here? Will you add a course, or do you have your basically your schedule and the agenda of where you're going to play and how much time you can spend there set?
Yeah, sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. Like, a lot of it is, I mean, the itinerary for all intents and purposes is completely filled out. But if there's something that I really have to do, I mean, I can swap out a course, try not to hurt anyone's feelings and head elsewhere. And that happens once in a while. I have a spot. Yeah, like I have a spot next week that I'm trying to – I have one spot that I'm trying to fill. So there is just a tiny bit of flexibility. But all that stuff really happened before I took off, you know, while I was building the itinerary, all the sort of you have to play here, you know, they all went on the map. And then I started looking at the map and plotting routes, and then I started breaking those down into days and weeks and putting those onto the calendar. So it was just the logistics of organizing the whole thing. I mean, that was a year of work, and now 6 months out here doing it. So
yeah, I was reading Zach Lowe has this piece where he basically ranks the league pass NBA teams for the year and the most watchable, and he has, you know, this basically this number system he made up, and of course, you know, it's arbitrary to him, but you know, that's how he ranks the teams. Do you have any sort of a system? I mean, it's not points obviously, but do you have a checklist of things you're looking for in a golf course, you're looking for in a club, you're looking for in the playing partners you're with? Are there things as you enter the gate of a place you've never been before that will make it a great experience, a good experience, a decent experience, or even a bad experience?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I was thinking about that. Like, there's a lot of little things when you're going to so many different courses, and, you know, what's the, you know, is, all right, is there a gate? Is the guy going to be cool? Because that can set things, the tone right there can be
absolutely
be really nice, or kind of, today's going to be weird, or I'm already a little bit afraid. You know, can I just chill and change my shoes in the parking lot, or is that going to get some member kicked out? So, you know, do I have to go to the bag drop? Is there a dude at the bag drop? Do I tip the dude at the bag drop? Like, all these little things, and not that I'm afraid to tip people, but sometimes there's clubs where you're not allowed to tip, and then there's places where if you forgot to tip, then you've embarrassed somebody. So it's like navigating that sort of language, that sort of these unspoken rules of all these different places is a little bit is a little challenging. But I know it's going to be I know it's going to be a good day. Like, today I went to Cape Arundel in Maine and walked right up, saw the parking lot. It had just a real quaint small clubhouse, and it was obviously like, all right, I can change my shoes here in the parking lot, no problem. Walk in, just everything, hey, you here for some golf? You know, like that kind of attitude. I'm like, this is good. I like this place. Like, no fuss, no bullshit. I don't have to kiss anybody's butt. And then it was even better when the assistant pro was like, hey, paper tiger, right? And then I'm like, all right, cool. Now I don't have to like beg for golf. And sound like,
do you want me to sign your copy?
Well, he didn't have it with him.
Yeah,
but
I'll just say, I'll take a picture with you.
I mean, that's really handy when that happens, because it's not because of my ego, just because I'm not going to have to like convince them that I'm not some dude who's just looking for free golf, which is actually what I am, but that I have a legitimate purpose behind it. But yeah, I mean, it all starts, I think, really with the welcome that you get, which is seems sort of obvious, but you get all sorts of different welcomes, and some feel like, you know, you're lucky to be here, and some feel like, you know, we're lucky to have you here. And obviously, the latter is quite nice. And really for me, like, the less fussy and the less fancy, the better. I sometimes have a hard time like summoning the energy to, get all excited about, you know, just worrying about the locker room and this, that, and the other. I just want to golf, and any place that's just like, this is built just so you can golf, I'm always excited about that.
Yeah, I'm imagining that there'll be parts of the book, if not a part of the book, that will speak on this, considering it was Ireland, Scotland, and now the United States of America, which is a place with some of the most incredible golf courses in the world, but a lot of them, as you've mentioned, have gates and they're closed and they're not that excited to have you there. And so that'll be an interesting kind of theme of the book, if it's in there, about the difference in that. Because you've had a chance to play, you know, when you think about Scotland, you can play any golf course in Scotland outside of one that everybody's heard of, and you can go walk up, and if you pay your, and you have a tee time and you pay, they'll let you out there and you're good to go. And here, even with your connections, I'm sure sometimes, as you said, you show up at these places and you feel like they are just ready for you to leave. And that isn't always the best feeling, especially when you're excited about them. I mean, these are the top 20, top 30, top 100, whatever you want to call them, golf courses in the country. And sometimes, you know, you definitely aren't going to be changing your shoes in the parking lot.
I know. And I have some of those coming up this week, and that's great. And I'm excited for it. But that's absolutely a big theme that I hope that I don't hit it too hard in the book, actually. You know, I'll definitely make the point, though, that, you know, that golf has this accessibility over there versus our sort of closed country club model. Which one's better? I mean, and there are good things about both. And I don't know if their system would totally work over here. And I understand why the private club exists in America, you know, in this country of sort of like mobile class structure, et cetera. Like, that's your golf club was a way to sort of distinguish yourself. And I get it. And that's all fine and well. But yeah, there are those that sense of, you know, when I leave the property, I get to exhale. Like, I get that at some places. And that's not the best. And it's kind of a shame, because it's just the place to play a game, right?
Right.
We lump all this other stuff onto it and attach all this other sort of meaning to it as well. And on one side of it, that adds to the excitement and the lure. And on the other side of it, it just seems like kind of like hot air, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's there are flip sides to it, though. You know, I played Cal Club the day before our 100-hole hike out in San Francisco, and I knew nothing about what to expect when I arrived. And the membership from the start were unbelievable. I mean, these guys were getting up and introducing themselves, and somebody bought me a beer at the bar as the football was on, because it was a Sunday, and they got me a locker, and I could throw my travel bag in there because I hadn't gone to the hotel yet. And when we got done, it was like hanging around after. It was just one of those environments that you felt like you were a part of it. You felt like you almost, that they were excited to have you there, that you belonged, and that they didn't want to see you go. And that, again, for a very nice private club, is a great feeling to have. So there are some out there that are the complete opposite. And those are the ones when you leave, you're like, I cannot wait to get back to this place and play here again, because the experience is better than the golf course, and the golf course is damn good as well. I'm going to ask you a couple questions, and I'll let you go. First question. Somebody's about to play golf with Tom Coyne during either this experience or otherwise. Mm-hmm. What's the one question they should not ask you while you're playing 18 holes?
Oh, there's a long list. They ask me why I'm not walking this one. That I get.
What do they say?
But so you're not walking this one? You know, because I walked to Ireland. And I'm in America. And like,
I'm not Forrest Gump.
No, I'm not walking this. That annoys me on numerous levels. Because it's like, well, you're belittling what I'm actually trying to accomplish. And two, you just wasted your breath, because that was a stupid question. But yeah.
All right. That's a good one. Second question, and then you get to go. You're going to be in Phoenix. Are we playing golf while you're in Phoenix, Arizona for the book?
Hell yeah, we are.
Where are you playing
Absolutely.
While you're here?
Jeez, look at I can't find my phone. What's in Phoenix?
I think you're
Where's
playing. I think you said you're playing Papago, which is a great municipal golf course in the center of town, and it's a place that I would say might have one of the best money games early in the week, every week, and you'll see mini tour guys go out there, and even PGA Tour players at times, Korn Ferry guys will play in it, and it's a desert golf course where you can find your golf ball. So two thumbs up for Papago.
Let's play there.
Yeah, no,
all right, let's go there.
I love Papago.
And let's get some of that money game action going.
I think it's a Monday.
Do I get my shots?
You don't get shots in the Papago money game. You got to play them straight up. But there's skins involved. There's closest two. involved, and there's about 17 ways you can win and or lose money in those games because they're really well designed. But even if you're playing terrible, they have a final five game where it's the final five hole score and that's it. And if you play the final five a couple under, you tend to win your money back.
Dig it. All right, I'm in. Let's do that.
Pop a go, and then hopefully I can take you out to Phoenix Country Club if it works. Tom, I appreciate the time, and thanks again for the invite for the 100-hole hike. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks so much. Thanks for being a part of it. I could not have made it through without you pulling me through, your optimism and your good golf, too. It was great to see you play. It was awesome.
You can follow Tom at CoinRider on Instagram and Twitter. Follow along. Buy all his books. They're worth the read. I've read them all well before I knew who he was, and he's as good a guy after you meet him as I thought he'd be when I was reading his books.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Well, that'll do it for me. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Tom Coyne. Make sure you follow all of his travels. Coyne Rider, he's great. His Instagram's awesome. He's got a digital series that's really fun and different. And, of course, you can read everything he does on Golfer's Journal and of course, in book form coming out, you know, in a year, year and a half or so when this book hits. This is going to be, I think it'll be probably the best one. I mean, I think American golf and everything that goes into it and how expansive it is, and the places that you and I have never heard of that he's going to write about. It's going to be awesome. Hope you guys have a great week. Thanks to Titleist. Thanks to the Golfers Journal for helping out with the charity thing. Hit the link that I have on my Twitter or on my Instagram if you haven't subscribed. My next piece, my second piece for the Golfers Journal, comes out in the next issue that hits the mailboxes in November. So if you are already subscribed, you'll get to read that. Let me know what you think. If you're not subscribed, sign up. It's a cool little thing, and it's a great gift. If you have a golfer in your life and they're hard to buy for, it's a really, really great gift for the holidays coming up, for birthdays, anything like that. The Golfer's Journal is great. We will talk to you guys next week.